But I'd like to turn now to Lee Fletcher from the Atmospheric, Oceanic and Planetary Physics Group at the University of Oxford. He works on theoretical models of how the atmospheres of these large planets behave, and Lee's group works with observations made by amateurs like John Rogers. I started by asking him why the giant planets were such fascinating places to study.
All four giant planets in our solar systems can be thought of as rather simple examples of what a planet looks like if you don't have the complicating influence of continents, mountain ranges, and oceans like we do here on the terrestrial planets. What you're looking at when you look through a telescope at the giants is pure weather systems, pure, unadulterated, fluid dynamic systems. In fact, the natural state for any spinning planet to take on would be a banded structure, something like Jupiter and Saturn, with those powerful eastwards and westward winds pushing material east and west around the planet. So by looking at the giants, certainly from a meteorology point of view, what we're trying to do is understand the physics and the chemistry of the weather systems on the giants so that we can then apply those same principles, those same ideas, to weather systems on our more complicated home planet.
So even though these are really very different from the Earth, they're tens of times more massive, what you're saying is that the physical processes going on in their atmospheres are actually very similar to what's happening on the rocky planets.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, a lot of the meteorology that we see on the giants is being driven by the deposition of sunlight. So on Earth, you have the sun heating up the ground. The ground then leads to convection within our own atmosphere, and those are the weather systems that you see affecting us every day here on Earth. Now, on the giant planets, the sunlight is still being absorbed by the clouds, by the gaseous species which are present in that atmosphere, and that energy is then able to drive the powerful atmospheric circulation that we're looking at.
Now, we've got these absolutely fantastic images that we see returned by spacecraft like Galileo of Jupiter and Cassini of Saturn.
Sure.
What can amateurs really contribute to our scientific understanding of those planets?
Okay, well, what you got to remember is that when you're looking through a telescope at visible wavelengths is that you're seeing light being reflected back from the cloud tops on any of these giant planets. Now, that sometimes gives us a false impression because you're thinking about things in just two dimensions. You're looking at light reflected from the very top of those clouds. But of course, these atmospheres are actually very complicated three-dimensional structures. Now, what the amateurs can do that we professionals sadly cannot, and even with a spacecraft in orbit around some of these planets, we're unable to do this, is look at the giant planet on a night-by-night basis. So forming that continuous long-term data set to look at how the weather systems and how the features are evolving with time is something that uniquely amateurs can provide to the scientific community. And you've got these incredible guys out there who can devote time to the observations of the giant planets on a nightly basis to give us a data set that scientists can only dream about. So this close collaboration that we now have between the professionals who maybe get time on a telescope once every few months, if not once every few years, and the amateurs who are observing these complicated evolving systems on a nightly basis is stronger than ever. And it's really helping, and we're now getting a lot of scientific publications out of that collaboration.
When we look at, for example, the visible opaque surface of Jupiter, what physical structure are we looking at?
So when you're seeing Jupiter through a telescope, what you're really looking at is light being reflected back from the cloud tops. And our best understanding is that those clouds are made not of water ice like you would have here on Earth, but of crystals of ammonia that is frozen out to form those different clouds on the visible surface of Jupiter. Now, you're quite right, that's not a rocky surface. And in fact, we don't really know what happens at very great depths within these giant planets. We know that the pressures are so immense and the temperatures so immense that the hydrogen and helium, which makes up the bulk of these giant planets, gets compressed into a very alien, exotic form. In fact, we have this idea of something called metallic hydrogen, where the simplest element in the universe is actually separated out into its constituents, protons and electrons, and becomes electrically conducting. Now, we don't know a lot about this metallic hydrogen state of matter, but what we can tell you for certain is that there is no rocky surface, so to speak, to stand on in those giant planets. Now, those ammonia cloud tops, unfortunately, act as a limit to what we can understand about the giants. we use a process called remote sensing, whether it be from a ground-based telescope or whether it be from a spacecraft in orbit. And that means looking at the giant planets across multiple different wavelengths of light. Now, the different wavelengths probe down to different altitudes within the planet's atmosphere, but those clouds act as a limitation. We very rarely can get beneath those cloud tops, and that means that we struggle to see what's going on deep down below, which is annoying because a lot of the interesting dynamics, a lot of the convective activity which is shaping the appearance of those giant planets is being driven not from above but from below by powerful convection deep below the cloud tops.
I guess we can feel the gravitational influence of Jupiter, and we know it's got a very strong magnetic field. So I guess that is telling us something about what's beneath that opaque surface.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, one of the goals of the next spacecraft mission that's going to Jupiter, the Juno spacecraft, which is on its way at the moment and due to arrive in 2016, is to very precisely map the gravitational and magnetic field of Jupiter itself. Now, that is a way of peeling back the skin of the onion and actually peering below the clouds to try and figure out what the structure of the planet is at great depth. But it's still an enormous challenge. And what amateur observers are seeing when they look through a telescope is the very skin of the apple. They're seeing the top-level manifestation of things that are going on much deeper down. We have to think of these as big three-dimensional systems. I'll give you just one example of one of the things that we're trying to get at with the Juno spacecraft. A lot of the meteorology that we see, we believe is being driven by very powerful rising convective columns, just like you would see a cumulus cloud here on Earth on a stormy day. Now, that rising column is actually dredging material from deep down within the atmosphere and pulling it up to above the cloud tops at levels that we can see. Now, that material is then redistributed by the powerful winds that are at play within Jupiter and Saturn's atmosphere, and they blow the material around the planet over different timescales. It's almost like injecting a tracer into Jupiter's atmosphere and seeing how it evolves then over the course of time. The reason we might want to do that is because it's telling us about the large-scale circulation, it's telling us about the winds, it's telling us about the climate of this giant planet. Now, those rising columns are something we struggle to get to, but something like Juno will be able to peel back those different levels of the onion and see down to where the columns are initiated to understand how they evolve over the course of time.
We'll be hearing more from Lee about the Juno mission in just a moment.